Hello, everybody. Good evening. Welcome into another edition of the JMAC podcast. This will mark the second day in a row when we're going to talk about issues instead of some guy who used to be in the White House a long, long time ago. So I hope you'll join me. I've got some important issues that I want to discuss with you tonight, all based upon ideas that President Biden, now no longer president-elect, President Biden is going to implement or has already implemented in his first day in office. So that includes, should there be a federal minimum wage increase? And then I want to talk to you about executive orders. One of the first things that President Biden did, he walked into the Oval Office and there sitting on his desk is a stack of executive orders. And I want to talk to you a little bit about executive orders and why I think they are completely out of control. They need to be scaled back dramatically. And we need to get back to the idea that Congress passes laws, not presidents passing laws. And then after that, I just have a quick update for you on COVID-19 and new research that shows that a certain number of people, after they've recovered from COVID, they die within a certain amount of time after recovering. Now, it's a smaller number. I don't want to panic you or freak you out, but this is something that you need to hear. And also, yet another research another study that continues to prove and verify the veracity and importance of wearing a mask. So all of those things are on the agenda today. So I just want to say hi, first of all, to all of you joining me on TikTok, on Facebook, on Instagram, YouTube, Twitch. We are broadcasting on just about every platform that we can think of. If you're on TikTok, say hello. I can see you on TikTok. I kind of feel like, remember Romper Room? I kind of feel like when I'm talking about who's watching on TikTok, that I'm doing Romper Room. If you don't remember Romper Room and look in the mirror, romper, domper, stomper, do something like that. Do you remember that? And then she'd say, I see Arlette. I see Sam. I see Jeff. It's interesting because I'm using two different systems. On the TikTok system that I'm using, I can see who is logged in and who is watching, and I can say hello to you. On all the other systems, YouTube, Facebook, Twitch, Periscope, I can't see who you are until you comment. So that's why I like when we get started out, if you just say hello quickly and tell me where you are listening from. Like Paul is already saying hello. Orion has already logged in and is commenting on the minimum wage. And David is already commenting on the minimum wage. So just quickly say hello. I would love to know your name and where you are listening from. Rodney on TikTok says, hello. Hey, Rodney, where are you at, Rodney? Where are you listening from or watching from? I would love to know. Jan on TikTok says, when will the $15 an hour be a reality? I don't know. I know this is part of his plan. I'm not sure when it will be put in place. So with that, why don't we do it? Let's dive into this question about the minimum wage. So should there be a federal increase in the minimum wage? Wow, I've got people listening from all over. User 747 is listening from Georgia. Rodney Baker from South Florida. Jan in Utah. Hey, everybody. It's great to have you on board. South Florida. I lived in Miami for a couple of years as a missionary. Just a great area. And I was listening to somebody's travel log today about driving down the Keys and going down past Key Largo and down to Key West and Seven Mile Bridge and all of that stuff. So just kind of brings back memories. All right, I digress. I'm completely sidetracked. Let's get into the case for the federal minimum wage, okay? Right now, the federal minimum wage is $7 and change. So there is a federal minimum wage right now. And then each state has their own minimum wage. Now, I understand the idea here is that you want the minimum wage, you want to increase people's living standards. I completely understand that. But the question is, will you accomplish that? And I have to tell you, there's a couple of terms going around. There's the minimum wage term, and then there's another term that I can't stand, and that's living wage. This idea that the entry-level wage in our society, entry-level, no work experience, no education, entry-level, the idea that that is supposed to be a living wage, something you can support a family on, to me, I cannot stand this idea. And I want to combat this idea. That by virtue of the fact that you just came out of the womb, whoop, that's the sound, by the way, coming out of the womb, that you're entitled to a wage that you can support a family on? We got to stop. That's crazy. There's a reason why wages go up. I mean, there's a reason why I don't make minimum wage. And there's a reason why I only made minimum wage for 3 months of my life. And ever since then, I've never made minimum wage again. And it's because it's a matter of supply and demand. You look at employees as a product, human capital, right? And so if there's a huge number of applicants, then you don't have to pay as much. But if you're looking for a select skill set, then there are fewer applicants and you start to have to compete for those applicants, right? And so then you start to raise the salary, right? So that's why you want to get an education. That's why you want to get experience, because you put all those labels on you because you're literally a product that company wants, and you want them fighting over you. And the more companies you get fighting over you, the more money you can make. And that's why elite athletes make so much money, because they have all of these organizations that are willing to fight for them. So that's the way that this is supposed to work. So at the baseline entry level, No work experience, no education requirement, minimum wage. That's supposed to be a living wage? We got to stop with that. There's so many reasons why, and I'm going to go through a list here, why I completely disagree with the idea that the minimum wage should be a living wage. So that's the first thing, right? The other thing is that it's not the job of the federal government, in my opinion, to set a minimum wage. If the states want to do it, then we debate it on a state level. But it should be debated on a state level and not a federal level, because every state's economy is completely different. And I'm going to show you how raising the minimum wage will actually help some places as far as purchasing power, but it will hurt purchasing power in other places. So I don't believe this is the job of the federal government. They need to butt out. Let states handle their own wages. Why do you as a federal government need to be involved in that process? There's just no way in my mind that you should be involved. 10th Amendment. Send it back to the states. The other thing is that this is definitely not something that you should be passing during a recession or a pandemic. Now you might be thinking, Jay, we want to add money to these people's wallets. Well, here's the problem with raising the minimum wage. You're going to reduce jobs when you raise the minimum wage. So the worst time to raise the minimum wage is during a recession with high unemployment. Because what's going to happen, especially during a pandemic, if they decide to do it during a pandemic, is companies, there's this balancing act, right? So if you are a restaurant, for example, and you pay your employees a base minimum wage, and now suddenly you've doubled that. You've literally doubled the cost of your labor force. Now, are you telling me that most small businesses can afford to double the expense of their labor force? They can't. And so what they're going to do, what they're going to have to do, is they're going to have to lay people off. Because you might say, well, they can raise their prices. Well, we as consumers are not going to stand for prices to go up dramatically in one shot. There's this amount that we're willing to pay. And so suddenly, if they want to pass on all of those expenses on the menu or in the end cost to the consumer, they are not going to be able to just hand it over to consumers. So you're going to cost jobs. I remember back when I lived in Las Vegas, I saw a perfect example of this. There was the labor union that represented the hospitality for all of the casinos up and down the strip. And as you know, if you've been to Vegas, there's two parts of the strip. There's old downtown, Glitter Gulch downtown, and then there's the southern part of the strip. Well, when I was there, I don't know what it's like now, but when I was there, the casinos on the southern part of the strip, they were all profitable. But not one of the Glitter Gulch casinos were property. They were profitable. They were losing money like crazy. So here comes the labor union. And they demand a major increase. And they negotiate. And the hotels on the southern part of the strip, they agree to it. They can afford it. But the hotels in Glitter Gulch, they were losing money. And they told the labor unions, there's no way, there's absolutely no way we can afford this new contract. Look, here's our profit and loss statement. Here's our labor costs. You tell us how. And the labor union said, oh, we don't care about that. You're going to pay our people according to this contract and what they've agreed to on the southern part of the strip, or we're going to strike. So eventually, those downtown casinos, they signed the contract because a strike would have put them out of business. Guess what they did the day after they signed the contract? They laid off 25% of their labor pool. So the labor union, in fighting for a raise for all of their people, what they fought for is for the loss of jobs of 25% of the labor force of downtown. And that's an example of what we will see if this goes into place in many places in the country. And it's also a perfect example of why it could be acceptable in some states, but not acceptable in other states, and why states need to decide, not the federal government. This will cost jobs, at least in the short term. So during a recession with high unemployment rate, worst time to raise minimum wage, in my opinion, worst time. The other thing I will suggest to you is get out a newspaper. I'm dating myself here. I was going to say, get out the classifieds in the newspaper. Go on to KSL.com or wherever you look for jobs, and I want you to find me minimum wage jobs. You know, it's very hard to find Utah minimum wage jobs. I'll bet it's hard to find minimum wage jobs in a lot of the areas where you live. Why is that? People are paying, like right now, you can go to McDonald's and you can start at $12 an hour here, which is like $3 or $4 above minimum wage. Why are they paying above minimum wage? There's this idea that employers will do everything in their power to pay you as little as possible unless the government steps in and forces their hand. That's what you're being told. But it's not reality. They're competing for you. And there's not enough people at minimum wage level anymore to take these jobs. So the natural market forces are kicking in, and these restaurants and these businesses are having to pay higher than minimum wage already. And that, to me, is the way that it's supposed to work. They're competing for the same labor pool. So that's another point I want to make. And again, as I said, businesses just don't have this money sitting, just sitting around. I think that, again, I'll go back to it. The idea of a living wage is preposterous. The idea that somehow all employers will be able to keep all their staff when suddenly you're forcing a wage increase on everybody is, again, ridiculous. And so you have to be careful about when you do this. And I also believe that during a pandemic is the worst possible time to do this. If you want to get money, if you want to get money to people to help them survive, do it through stimulus checks or tax credits or other means. Don't strap employers that are already struggling with having to provide this increase. I think that that would be a huge, huge mistake. So those are just my initial thoughts about a minimum wage increase. So what I want to do now is go to your comments. And I've got this cool new graphic. Look at this. Where I can put your comments up. Look at how, is that cool or what? Again, unfortunately on TikTok, I can't post your comments to the screen. But I can see your comments and I would love to see them. Let's go to Orion. He says, oh, we got to move that down. That's got to fit in the window there. All right. The standard for federal minimum wage should be whatever it is when enacted, adjusted for inflation. It should be adjusted every 2 years accordingly. If states want to do that, Orion, awesome. The federal government, no business, in my opinion, being involved in that. No business. Let's go to David. Have market forces been taken out of wages for entry-level jobs somehow? Is there a way to bring them back in if they are not there? No, as I pointed out, just for fun, go on KSL.com and try and find a minimum wage jobs. It's very difficult in the state of Utah to find a minimum wage job because they're competing for that entry-level workforce. This is Blake joining us again. Hey, Blake. Hello from Oklahoma. This is Andrew on Facebook. I am a centrist liberal. I enjoyed you on KSL. I like listening to a principled conservative. I was happy to discover you are now podcasting. Well, Andrew, I am glad that you found us. Let's see here. Bobby says minimum wage should be higher. Bobby on Twitch. Bobby, I understand that idea. I've expressed to you why I think that it is a mistake, but I definitely hope that you can agree that it should be on a state level, not a federal level. Let's see. This is Bobby the Goblin. Do you take donos? Is that donations? Is that the lingo for donations? Yeah, actually, if you look in the description of this podcast, you can become a patron and make a one-time donation or a monthly donation, and I'll give you more information on that coming up. Blake says, $15 minimum wage, and I'll have to let go of some workers. New guys aren't worth $15 in landscaping. The idea that businesses just have the money lying around, which one is it? Sitting around, you know, this is one of my problems with the Democrats in general and their belief system. It just feels as though they think that businesses are just hoarding all of this money and that they could just magically double your salary. And as a business, you're going to be fine. To me, that is just, it's a scary thought. Here's Chris. Chris says, maybe a smaller minimum wage, like $10 max. Each state is drastically different as far as costs. An amount just large enough to prevent the vulnerable from being financially taken advantage of in the state with the lowest cost of living. All right. Thank you, Chris. Amy says, I hear what you're saying. Not everyone has the same opportunity. I agree with you. I agree with you. But again, I still think that if you're looking at the entry level wage in a country, this is the first time job level. That's what this is. The idea that it should be a living wage, I just, that just really that really gets to me. However, the cost of living keeps going up. Competition and relying on people to do the right thing doesn't seem to be working. Amy, go in the classifieds. If you're in Utah, wherever you live, go in the classifieds and find minimum wage jobs. The idea that companies are not willing to pay more, they are, when they're competing for that labor pool. Amy says, that's not true, Jay. The cost of living, especially rent in Utah, for example, clearly keeps going up. People can't even afford a place to live. Here again, it's Amy, I would suggest to you it's an endless circle. If you're going to rely on the government to force a living wage, it's an endless circle that can never be resolved. And all you're going to do is guarantee that everything keeps going up. Because when you increase the minimum wage, you increase costs for everybody. And there's been studies that actually show that the people who experience the greatest detriment from a raised minimum wage are the lower income people, because they spend their money more in places where those companies are paying minimum wage. So you're raising expenses. Companies are having to raise their expenses because they now have to pay a minimum wage. And so the cost of living is now going up because they're passing on those expenses to the consumer. So the cost of living is going up. And now what do you have to do? You have to raise the minimum wage again. And then expenses go up, and then you have to raise the minimum wage again. When you talk about rent, when you talk about other things, there are other places that you can focus on to get economies working again and to get competition working again. One of the reasons why rent is going up is because of lack of availability and high demand, right? So supply and demand is driving those things up. You don't answer a supply and demand question for housing by saying we're going to force employers to pay more. What you have to do is figure out the equation of supply and demand for rent. Is that incentivizing as a state, giving tax incentives to lower cost housing? Is that building more infrastructure so that people can live farther out, so that they can live in Harriman and other places and they can get transportation into the inner cities or wherever else where people are working? There's all kinds of other things that you can do if you're talking about rent or whatever the expense is. You have to deal with it, in my opinion, at that level. So why are rents going up? We need to find a way to get affordable rent to people. How do we incentivize that? How do we make that happen? If the idea is that you're just going to pass every inflationary expense onto the employer, you're just guaranteeing more inflation. And again, an endless circle that will just keep going around and around and around. So that's why I think it's so important to understand how these things work. And having been in business for the first 20 years of my life before I got into talk radio, and looking at P&Ls and looking at how few small businesses, how difficult it is to start a small business. And that's one of the other things that I think people miss, is that it's so expensive to start a business right now because of all of the regulation, because of all the labor burdens. I mean, do you understand that if you cost $15 to your employer? Let me put it this way. Let me ask you a question. If your wage is $15 an hour, how much do you cost your employer? How much do you cost? Put it in the comments. If your wage is $15 an hour, how much do you cost your employer? How many of you are going to say $15? Because it's completely wrong. you probably cost your employer $20 an hour, $22 an hour. It depends on the industry. When you add payroll taxes, when you add workers' compensation, when you add all of the state regulations, all of the federal regulations, you cost your employer much more than just your wage. In fact, back when I lived in California and my brother had a roofing company, the workers' compensation rate alone, just for workers' compensation, was 50%. That means if you had an employee that you paid $20 an hour, you had to pay another $10 an hour just in workers' compensation costs. And then you had all of the other labor burdens on top of that. If you're trying to heap all of the world's problems of things that can't be afforded, all of these other things, if you're trying to heap them on the employer, all you're going to do is increase the base cost of living for everybody. Davis House says, truth. This, let's see here. This is Gina on Periscope. Minimum wage is always supposed to be a living wage. No, it's not true, Gina. The whole term living wage is something that was never, ever brought up when I was younger. In fact, I think living wage has only been around for maybe 10 years, maybe a little bit longer. Minimum wage is never intended to be a living wage. The idea that you can raise a family on minimum wage, this is fairly new. And I just don't think that it's something that is tenable. I don't think it's sustainable. Because again, what you're doing is instead of having competition and supply and demand and market forces and all of those things decide, you're telling somebody, if you want to go into business, you have to be able to make sure that everyone who works for you can get a living wage. You're chasing people out of business. There's a reason why we don't have a rise of small businesses everywhere. There's a reason why, because large companies can afford these increases. Small employers can't. These burdens and these expenses chase employers out of the market. And let's say you get a cool idea for some widget and you want to make this widget. So you figure how much people are willing to pay for it. You figure, okay, they're willing to pay this amount. And so now I just need to find a labor force that I can employ to pay this amount. And you realize you can't do it. You've been priced out of business from the beginning because of all the labor burdens. So again, all of the ails of society cannot and should not be placed upon the employer. Jihab says people will have to pay the high housing and then high groceries, everything. Sarah. Hey, Sarah. Also, what jobs are our kids going to work? There needs to be a place they can begin working and gain experience. Gina, again on Periscope, costs are going up anyway. It's time to raise minimum wage. Gina, is your logic really costs are going up, so we need to continue to do things to make them go up? Or is it time to deal with reasons why costs are going up? Because it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Oh, costs are going up. Let's force employers to pay more. What does that do? That raises costs. You're just chasing your tail. When again, you can look at other places. You look at groceries. Why are groceries going up? You look at rent. Why is rent going up? Okay, what can we do to encourage competition? What can we do in these environments to get competition and to get costs down? If the answer to increased expenses is just paying people more, you're just going to increase expenses again. This is Paul. I think many people feel that increasing the minimum wage is a shortcut to wealth redistribution without understanding the consequences of what will happen to the labor market. You guys see, I'm trying to get this. Oh, let me try this. I'm trying to get this, your text, to show up all nice and clear in this cool box that I made, but it's not working. Hang on. If I go like that, maybe like that. Does that look right? I don't know if that's going to work for each comment, though. So we'll see. I was trying to be cool. It's not really working out. Gina again. Make it illegal for landlords to raise rent. During a recession or a pandemic, that might be something that can be supported. But a landlord's expenses go up as well. So that's just part of the continuing cycle. So we need to find different solutions. Blake says federal minimum wage increase is simply a ploy for votes, nothing more. Maybe for some people, I actually think that it's well-intentioned. I think that so many programs and things that are presented by the left are well-intentioned. I just don't know that they understand the unintended consequences of what they're suggesting, what they're proposing. And that's where I'm at. This is Gina. All your talking points help people like Bezos more than workers. Again, I think it's just so important to understand, Gina, that businesses are in business to make money. And every expense that they have, they have to pass on to the consumer. What is the definition of profit? It's how much money you have left from sales after you've paid all of your expenses. If you have a labor force that you're paying a minimum wage and the federal government just came in and says you have to double it, then what happens to your profits? They disappear. So in order to remain in business, what do? You raise your prices. So now those people who got their brand new $15 minimum wage, they want to go out and spend it. And what happened? Their purchasing power is less. Let's get some of your other comments. Orion says, I cost my employer an additional 35% of my salary for benefits and taxes. It's a great point. It's exactly what I'm talking about. This is Sarah. She says, I really like the new cool box that you made. LOL. It looks like it might be working now. So maybe I fixed it. We had to fix it live on the show here. This is David. Oh, see, it didn't work. David, you messed it up. Let's do that. Please correct me if I'm wrong, but people on the left in general seem to want fewer large corporations, yet this large of a jump in minimum wage will kill small businesses. That's the thing, is they look at the way that big businesses act, like Gina wants to talk about Jeff Bezos, right? But you have to understand that most people are not employed by the big businesses. That our economy, the majority of it is small businesses. It's not big businesses. So we look at the practices of the big businesses and we want to think they're evil and they're the root cause of the problem. And so we pass laws and minimum wages and other things focusing on the big businesses, not understanding the unintended consequences that we're heaping upon the majority of the businesses, which are small. Again, the unintended consequences of our actions. Jihab makes the point. Bezos can afford to pay 15. Mom and pops can't. This is Gina. So you think that profit for some businesses is more important than ending poverty. Gina, if you are a business and you're not making money, you go out of business. There is no business without profit. People don't start a business to end poverty. They start a business to make a profit. Do you really think there's a world where businesses exist and they pay a wage to everybody so that they can afford everything? And even though they're not making a profit, that somehow they survive? That they still exist? How does that happen? Show me that math. It can't happen. Businesses have to make a profit or they die. And if they die, every job in that business dies with them. You can be as concerned as you want about poverty and all of those things. But if you're not making a profit, you're done. You're cooked. So trying to solve poverty by putting an increase on employers, whether or not they can afford it, is a great way to put people out of work completely. And a great way to increase expenses for people. This is Orion giving us some great stats. According to the federal SBA, 47.3% of Americans are considered employed by small business. The standard is 50 employees or less. Thank you. Thank you for that. I'm looking on TikTok to see if any of you have commented on TikTok. Just a lot of people checking in and watching. I can see your comments on TikTok, so feel free to check in. Let me show you something else. This will be informative as well. And again, if your state wants to debate minimum wage, then that's where the debate belongs. But let's talk about the impact of a federal minimum wage increase on the state, on the country. Let me see if I can pull this up. All right. I hope you can all see this. This is from the Pew Research Center. And what you're seeing is a graph of purchasing power increases or decreases if the minimum wage is increased to $15 an hour. Okay. And this is immediate. So this isn't because what happens is if you receive a minimum wage increase right now, then you will experience a benefit, but because it takes time for increases to go up. So there's no doubt, depending on where you're at, that the purchasing power will increase. But take a look at this estimated real purchasing power. So what this shows you is those places in the red and the yellow, their purchasing power actually goes down with the $15 minimum wage. The reason for that is in those states, they already have a $15 minimum wage in most of those states. But it's interesting, if you look at those are pretty much the most populated areas. Their purchasing power stays the same or it goes down. Okay, then you look at the kind of light purple, and those are people whose purchasing power would go up to $15 to $17 an hour. And then you look at the dark purple, and those are the people that would have, those are the areas that have the lowest wages, and they would see the most dramatic increase. The reason that I show you this is because it gives you a great example as to why a federal minimum wage is misguided policy. Again, I don't think they have the constitutional authority for it, first of all. And second of all, it does not do for the country what you think that it would do. So I found that to be very interesting. This is Gina. You have a fantasy of mom and pop, but your policy helps Bezos more. Gina, we've already established that. I'm going to move this down. We've already established that at least half of the employees of America are employed by small businesses. Okay. So those people are going to be dramatically adversely affected by this. So at least half. So does it help Jeff Bezos more? Certainly a large company that doesn't have to take on these added expenses, certainly they're going to be helped more. But Amazon and Walmart and some of these companies, they've actually let out. Didn't Amazon just increase their minimum wage? Does anybody know? I can quickly Google it here. Hang on. Let's take a minute. And the reason for that is because they're competing for jobs. $15 an hour. So there you go. So Amazon, Jeff Bezos, Amazon is already paying $15 an hour, more than double the federal minimum wage. So this minimum wage increase doesn't affect Amazon at all. What about Walmart? I think it's the same here. $15 an hour is what I see. So there again, it's not helping or hurting Bezos because he's already paying that amount. Okay, this is Amy who went on KSL. Okay, Jay, I found a job listing for a mixologist at Twisted Sugar for $7.50 an hour. That's very close to minimum. How many jobs did you see no experience required for above minimum wage? I mean, you found one. That's good. Do you see a lot of them? G-Hub says, let's go back to my cool screen here. Walmart doesn't hire full-time employees, do they? Yeah, absolutely they do. My sister's employed at Walmart full-time. This is Gina. You think people will stay at Amazon if they can get another $15 job? I don't know. But the $15 wage increase is not going to affect Amazon at all. They're already entry-level employees are already getting $15 an hour. Gina says, why would workers be against getting a raise? No workers would be against getting a raise. But I'll tell you, when I was in business, when I owned a restaurant, one of the things that I would do, because the employees saw all this money coming in, and then they didn't know what happened to it. And so they see all this money coming in, and they think that I, as a restaurant owner, I'm raking in the dollars hand and fist. But I was losing money every single month. So what I would do is I would sit down with my employees and I would show them the profit and loss statement. And I'd say, here's what's coming in. Here's what you're getting paid. And here's what I'm losing every single month. And that changed a lot of attitudes. And they treated me and their job very differently. Orion says, many restaurant jobs, my little box is not going to work. Many restaurant jobs, including bartending, includes tips. So it's typical for a restaurant to pay minimum wage or even less for the base rate. You are correct. So I think that that's a pretty good discussion about minimum wage. I just would encourage you, if you're in favor of it, to really do some research. Find out how much you really cost your employer. Find out how many companies in your area are actually paying the minimum wage. Find out if you're talking about increases in cost of living, what's causing that increase? I guarantee you raising the minimum wage is going to add to that increase. And can smart government, good government, find a way to resolve those problems without heaping that burden onto the employers of America? That's what I think would be good policy. That's what I think needs to happen from my own experience in the restaurant business. And I, for example, when I was with Little Caesars and I ran all 42 Little Caesars restaurants in the state of Utah. I don't know how many of you know that I did that, but out of the 42 restaurants, I think only 16 of them were profitable. They were very profitable, because Utahns love them some pizza. But all of those other stores that you look at and that those employees work at, and they're thinking, look at all this money coming in, not understanding that no profit was being made, and you suddenly force them to double their wage. Now, how many of those 16 are profitable? And how many can stay? And think about each one of those restaurants as an individual, small business, as opposed to part of a large company. So just something to think about as we go into President Biden and his efforts to raise the minimum wage. I love your comments. Gina, I hope you don't feel too picked on. We definitely disagree with each other on this. And I can see that a lot of our listeners are commenting back and forth. But I hope it looks like everyone is being respectful. And I love that we can have a discussion here. And we can disagree, and everybody's being respectful. No trolls. This is a no troll zone. So thank you, everybody, for that. And Gina, I hope maybe I've given you some things to think about and, you know, see things from the other side of the perspective a little bit. And with that, why don't we move on to the next topic, shall we? And that is a discussion, something that I've talked about quite a bit on my show for years. And that is a discussion about executive orders and the rampant improper use of executive orders by the POTUS, whoever the POTUS is at the time. So here we are. It's President Biden's first day in office. He walks into the Oval Office, and sitting on his desk is a stack of executive orders. And many of them are just flat undoing all of the things that President Trump did with executive orders. And guess what President Trump was doing with his executive orders? He was undoing everything that President Obama was doing with executive orders. Is this really good government? Is this really the way that we want things to do? This kind of whiplash back and forth? There are things that an executive should be able to issue orders over. But in my opinion, those are things where quick decisions need to be made and where an executive can handle them under the things that are in his purview. But if they are issues that can take time to be resolved and decided, executive orders are not the way to go. Here's just a quick list of the executive orders that President Biden signed today.
Mr. Biden wasted no time getting to work in the Oval Office, signing executive orders ending construction launched by President Trump on the southern border wall, scrapping his so-called Muslim travel ban, and rejoining the Paris Climate Agreement.
There's no time to start like today's.
He also ordered a nationwide masking policy on federal property and extended a pause on evictions, foreclosures, and student loan payments.
So there you go. That's his list. This is Sarah. Sarah, let me put you in the cool box here. Try one more time. Sarah, who started all this executive order thing? I feel like it started with President Obama, but I might be wrong. That's really when it started to be on my radar, Sarah. When President Obama got in and he wanted to get these things passed, and he's like, well, I can't because I don't have control of the House and the Senate. So I'm going to dive in and start doing executive orders. I should have been prepared for it. Dang it. You're bringing it up right now, but I should have been prepared for it. I'm sure there is a very cool infographic of executive orders, but that will just give us kind of an overview. It won't exactly answer the question here. Let's see here if I can pull this up. I apologize for the delay here. All right, let's see if I can. I wonder if I'm good enough to do this. Here we go. Executive orders through October 13th of past presidents. President Trump, 49. Obama, 26. Okay, so here we go, kind of busting perceptions. But again, this is overall executive orders. We don't know what they're about. So Bush, 33. Clinton, 38. H.W. Bush, 27. So look at that. Obama was lower on the list than everybody since Eisenhower. it's good to have facts, isn't it? Reagan 42, Carter 47, Johnson was 58, Eisenhower was 60, Kennedy 56, Nixon 37. That's interesting. Just in general, when you look at how many executive orders that they had. My concern is not the number of executive orders, it's the type of executive orders. So you look at, here we are, the president couldn't get his wall, his campaign promise of a wall, through Congress. So he found a way to take money out of the military budget and to build the wall. Now, President Biden is stopping the wall. So we're going to be left with this half wall on the border. To me, that is just the worst way to govern. Something like a border wall should not be decided by one person. That's why we have legislatures. The reason why you want things to be done in the legislature is so that they're hard to put in, but once they're in, they have lasting effect. Things like treaties, things like border walls. You talk about the DACA recipients, things like that. Those are all areas where you don't want somebody deciding them if in a mere 4 years that can be changed. So, for example, look at the Dreamers, the DACA kids. Here's Obama. He passes his executive order for DACA, for the Dreamers. Then, so here's all the Dreamers thinking, oh, we get to stay. This is great. They start their lives, whatever. And then here comes President Trump and he goes, no, not so fast. You may get sent back home. Now they're like, what? And now here comes Biden again. And I'm sure he's going to allow the Dreamers to stay. It's like, this kind of whiplash is just, we need measured government. And this is the furthest thing from measured. Just unbelievable to me. This is Orion. Wait, let me get you your box here, Orion. Let's get this right. Joe Biden's list. You know, I'm not going to say I was sad about a single one of those executive orders he signed today. That's not the question, Orion. The question is, this a good way to run a government? I think executive orders are out of control. That presidents need to be reeled in. Amy says, that's fascinating, Jay. Thanks for the graphic. I wonder what was happening historically during these times in context. And that's the thing. That graph doesn't show you context. I mean, you could have all different types of things going on, from recessions to possible wartime, to, you know, all kinds of other things going on that could cause an increase in executive orders. Blake says Obama started the abuse on important issues. Orion says Obama had a really thin line to walk in a Republican-controlled Congress. One wrong move on his part, I have no doubt, Paul Ryan would have impeached him. Well, that's what presidents do, is they... Now they look at the way it's supposed to happen, and that is you get Congress to pass the bills and then you sign them, and then you realize, well, I can't do that. And so suddenly the Constitution isn't good enough anymore. And so you decide to find another way to get your way. And that's not the way it's supposed to work. What used to happen is, if you wanted something, you would take your case to the American people. So you remember there was a time with State of the Union addresses where immediately after the State of the Union address, the president would go on a tour of the country. and give speeches across the country to convince people of the importance of all of the new programs and things that they're promoting. And then when you raise awareness in the people, hopefully the people will call their elected officials and you can get them to get some influence onto their representatives. The way you get things done, the way you're supposed to get things done in our country is by changing hearts and minds, building a consensus, and getting people to vote on what you want. It's not to ignore the constitutional process and just figure out a way to finagle it. And that's what we're resorting to. And by the way, I happen to love it. I hate it when you have one party that controls all the two branches. I hate it. I like gridlock. I'd like the numbers to be close so that they can compromise and get some things done. But forced compromise is a wonderful thing. It centers the argument. It centers the legislation. It keeps extremes from getting what they want. I love that. I want that. And that's the way that it should be. Disagreement has a centering effect when you're forced to build compromise in order to get what you want. Blake says, presidents were never... Look, see, I'm just getting all messed up here. Presidents were never meant to have this much power. States keep getting weaker, unfortunately. I agree with you. This is Gina, like when Joe said we should raise minimum wage and people voted for him. Gina, just because he said it should happen and people voted for him that it happened doesn't mean that it's good policy. Because I can flip it around for you and I can say all the things that Trump wanted and people voted for him? Are you telling me that that makes everything that Trump wanted good and correct? No, what we do here is we fight for what we believe and we don't say, oh, everybody wants it, so that must mean it's okay. Unfortunately, when you continue to feed certain lines to the people, they will start to believe them and they won't do the math. And so you need to go out and help them do the math. And when they get it wrong, this is a forum where I'm going to call them out and tell you why I think they got it wrong and what the reasonings are for that. Gina says he was winning hearts and minds. As you say, I agree. I totally agree. That doesn't make the policy right. But if they have control of the House and they have control of the Senate and he wants to sign it and they're able to pass a minimum wage law, they can do it. They can absolutely do it. That doesn't make it right. So I'm not suggesting that just because you can pass something or just because you can get a vote for something, that that makes the policy correct. That logic is failed logic, if you ask me. But he did get elected and they do have a majority. So now they can go and do what they want. But I'm going to be here and I'm going to be telling you about unintended consequences, about the true cause and effect of what they're doing, how it may make you feel good. It may make you feel like in the short term, things are better for you. Maybe you won't be the person who gets laid off when the minimum wage gets put in place. I hope you're not one of the people that gets laid off. But you might be. And it's not just minimum wage people who get laid off. Because sometimes you have to have those frontline people. And so other people get laid off. So we want to focus on good policy. And certainly a president has the right to take whatever policy, good policy or not, to the people and get votes for it and then put it in. Just like I have every right to try and change your heart and your mind and help you understand the unintended consequences of these actions, and that we can't just say, well, it feels right, and so we can do it. I think this is Blake. I think minimum wage law from the feds will be tested constitutionally by the Supreme Court. That would be interesting. And the last, there is a current federal minimum wage law that is in place. So if what they'll do is they'll say that this falls under interstate commerce, which is where they justify all of their laws, their federal laws, that somehow having a federal minimum wage across the country will benefit interstate commerce. That'll be their claim. And so it may be difficult for the Supreme Court to knock it down. I just want people to consider all of the negatives and the positives that come with it. And just like executive orders, you know, a lot of people think they don't complain about executive orders when their guy's in. Like, how many people complained voraciously about Obama's executive orders? And then Trump gets in and he wants to use executive orders to build a wall. How many of those people said, you got to stop with the executive orders? No, now they're getting what they want. So suddenly executive orders are okay. I've been singing this song for 20 years about executive orders. Any other thoughts on executive orders that we want to share before we move on to our next topic? I think tonight's going to be a little bit shorter show, which should be good for all of us, as we're all still kind of detoxing from what has been going on. If not, there's just two other stories that I want to share with you. These have to do with COVID. Some research that I think it's important that you hear. So let's move on to that, and then I'll also keep taking your comments as well on executive orders. So here's the question. What happens after you recover from COVID-19? This is a study that this is in the United Kingdom, and they tracked patients and their health after they were discharged from the hospital. So out of 47,000 patients that were discharged from the hospital, 29.4% were readmitted within 140 days. 30% went back to the hospital within 140 days. Of those 12.3% died. Now, some of the obvious reasons for this is we know that coronavirus affects those people who have other issues. And so it could very well be that COVID is affecting those issues, and that is escalating the mortality rates. But still, think about that. Out of 47,000 patients that were discharged from the hospital, 29% were readmitted within 140 days, and of those, 12.3% died. That's 1 in 8 of recovered coronavirus patients die within 5 months in the United Kingdom. It's one of the things that I've been sharing with you is that we don't understand this virus yet. And so when we talk about, let's just let everybody get it, we'll just get herd immunity, let's just sequester all of the high-risk people. They can shut down. They can, you know, be in their homes and whatever, and let everybody else just get it. We just don't know enough about this thing. I shared with you, I think it was 2 days ago, I showed you the picture of COVID lung, and even people who are asymptomatic have lung x-rays that are worse than smokers, and they were asymptomatic. So again, I think we need to continue to keep this thing and look at this thing seriously and treat it seriously. 1 in 8 recovered coronavirus patients die within 5 months. Now, we had somebody make a comment the other day saying, again, that masks don't work. What about the people who say masks don't work? I've shared with you study after study after study. Here is another one. This is UCLA. Listen to what they found about masks. The researchers came, this is NBC4 in LA. The researchers came to a variety of conclusions, including face masks were 79% effective in preventing transmission if they were used by all household members prior to symptoms occurring. So if they used it in the house, 79%. I don't wear a mask in a house. I don't know who does that. But listen to this. The use of masks was strongly protective, with a reduction of 70% for those that always wore a mask when going out. We've always said that a mask is to protect everybody else. It doesn't protect you. But I've shared with you several studies that actually show there is a protective value to you wearing the mask. This UCLA study says the use of masks was strongly protective, reduced the risk by 70% for those who actually wore a mask. And then they just took a look at different countries and states that had mask mandates and their transmission rates. Transmission was 7.5 times higher in countries that did not have a mask mandate. Not 7% higher, 7.5 times higher. The difference between U.S. states with mask mandates and those without found that the daily growth rate was 2 percentage points lower in states with mask mandates, estimating that the mandates had prevented 230,000 to 450,000 COVID-19 cases. That's powerful information right there. Very powerful information. So if you're still debating whether or not you should wear a mask, it protects you and it protects other people. And by the way, one of the executive orders that President Biden signed today was a mask mandate for all federal employees. He's not able, as far as I know, constitutionally, to put a mask mandate on all of the country. That's why states are doing it. And that belongs with the states. You guys in the comments are still debating minimum wage. Gina and Blake and G-Hob, you guys are all still having that discussion. Stacy puts a link here. You can look at that in the comments. This is too big to put on the screen, Stacy. Hello, by the way. She says, this is an interesting read from the signs of it. American citizens are going to be paying more for their energy and paying taxpayers more money into a global fund, which may or may not go towards helping climate change. That's interesting. Gina says, I'll get this right someday. Gina says, masks become partisan issues, made COVID spread faster. I agree with you. And they should have never been a partisan issue. Ever, ever, ever. Should have never been a partisan issue. This is Blake, says, I wear a mask, but I want a button that says I'm immune. You had it, right, Blake? You had COVID? We still don't know for sure if you're immune. And we don't know how long that immunity lasts. And we don't know if you can spread it. There's still a lot of unknowns. But I did a podcast months ago about what happens if you've got the vaccine. Do you get a card like that says, I've been vaccinated? And then will people be counterfeiting those cards? Will they be faking them like they did with the emotional support animals? You know, to say, I don't have to wear a mask. I've been vaccinated. Blake says, yeah, he did have COVID. Yeah, I remembered that, Blake. So again, just from that study, masks, strongly protective, reduce your risk by 70% of catching it. Transmission was 7.5 times higher in countries that did not have a mask mandate. That's powerful information. Absolutely powerful information. So that's really all I had prepared for you tonight. Did you guys have anything else that you wanted to discuss? We obviously had an inauguration today. If you heard the president's speech, I thought it was a great speech. And he is saying all the right things as far as uniting this country. I just don't know how much of it is going to happen. I also saw several stories today about QAnon supporters who are becoming disillusioned and sad that the storm never happened. All the QAnon predictions never emerged. Also, what about all those televangelists who said that President Trump was going to win? What about all of them? Orion says, you're lucky you haven't caught COVID yet, especially with all your running around we did earlier last year. You know, I actually think I had it. I haven't been tested, but back before it was a huge thing in January, I don't know if you remember Orion. Orion helped with my campaign for Congress. We took a break from the campaign, and my family and I, we went to Las Vegas for a week. When we came back, my wife and I were so sick for like 3 weeks, and it is some of the worst stuff I've ever had. And we both had it. Now, we didn't know to look for a sense of taste or smell, so I don't know about that, but we had all of the other symptoms. So we've at least both been telling ourselves that we had it. But again, we never got tested, so we still take every precaution. This is Amy. She says, I love the speech and Lady Gaga's national anthem. I worry about the mental state of the QAnon supporters. I don't think we're out of the woods yet. My experience with the mentally ill says otherwise. That's a good point, Amy. Did you see the... you know, all the state capitals across the country that were preparing for large turnouts, and you had one or two sad, lonely people. I think that the siege on the Capitol woke a lot more people up than we even know. And that's a good thing. If you want to say if there was a positive that came out of what happened on January 6th, it was a wake-up call for many. This is Orion. He says, you were kind of sick at the Lincoln dinner, which was right after your Vegas trip. That's right. I might have been like spreading it around. That is correct. I still, Orion, I forget that I spent the last 18 months running for Congress. It's like just moved on. Blake says, how big is QAnon? I don't know. I don't know any, LOL. I ran into quite a few on the campaign trail, and the guy who beat me has at least showed some sympathy for QAnon. Gina's still talking about minimum wage. Amy says, I also like the 191,000 flags. I think it's sad that so many attending in person wore body armor. You know, that's an important commentary, Amy. And I said this yesterday, when you look at 20,000 troops in Washington, D.C., when you look at a gate, a fence around the Capitol, when you look at an inauguration that people were not allowed to attend, and you realize it wasn't because of a foreign threat. It was because of American citizens. That's crazy. And because of COVID. It was both. But that's crazy. Hey, I want to remind you to take a minute, and if you have your cameras, take a picture of that cool little flow code right there, and it will take you to my website, and you can make a one-time donation or a monthly donation to help support this podcast. That will really help me out and help me bring this to you every single day. So either scan the QR code or go to jmcfarland.com and you can find out more information there. Everybody, I love your commentary here. Right Wing Nuts on TikTok says, talk about Trump's letter to Biden. I don't know what the letter said. Do you? All he said, it was a very generous letter. Sarah says, the whole inauguration ceremony moved me. and it gave me hope. Well, that was the intent for sure. But it's going to take people on both sides to snap out of this partisanship and to do what we're doing here, and that's try and get back to focusing on the issues and having legitimate debate and discussion about the issues with respect and kindness and listening and understanding, as we've demonstrated on the show tonight. So I appreciate each one of you and your effort to do exactly that. I think it starts with us. And you all are setting a great example. Orion says, it moved me too. It was like a cloud lifting and the sun came out. I know, right? I wasn't able to watch. I listened to it while I was driving around doing DoorDash. Sarah says, yes, for sure. We need to work together. All right, with that, everybody, thank you so much. I hope you have a wonderful night. If God willing and the creek don't rise, I will be back with you tomorrow. I'm sure we'll have much more to talk about as President Biden starts out with his first 100 days and the things that he wants to pass. So my intent is to get back to where I was before Trump, and that is focusing on policy and issues and talking about what has merit and what doesn't, and what are the unintended consequences, and how do we go out and change hearts and minds. So with that, everyone, I will say goodnight. Thank you so much for joining me, and I'll be back with you tomorrow.